Hey everybody, welcome to episode, I want to say 16 of GRCast. I'm Joe Ryan, your host, and joining me this week, we've got Randy Dankovich, a writer for Games Reviews and Process Media. How's it going, bud?
Hey, how you doing, man?
Same as ever. Very excited to be playing Plants vs. Zombies 2, as I know you are. Why don't you go ahead and break it down?
Well, I first had a chance to look at the game when I keep an overseas account just in case, you know, people, because a lot of these free-to-play games now have soft launches overseas, so companies can work out their economies and stuff, and I don't know, I kind of liked it then, and then I've been playing it more now that it's come out in the States, and I don't know, it just doesn't feel that much, it doesn't feel different enough to me to warrant calling it a full-fledged sequel that kind of tries to add these. It's really just a sequel because they found a way, it feels like they found a way to add an economy to the game, which, I don't know how you feel about that. It kind of frustrates me a little bit.
I was definitely worried about it when they first announced that it was going free-to-play or whatever. And yeah, I sort of agree that it's just like, they basically just reskinned everything. We're like, well, you know, you can play that game again. We're just going to change what it looks like or whatever. But for the most part, I liked Plants vs. Zombies 1 so much and spent such an absurd amount of money on it, rebuying it for different platforms like an idiot, that I think I could buy every single thing on offer in Plants vs. Zombies 2, and I still wouldn't come close to how much money I spent buying the first one over and over and over again.
The thing that bothers me is in a tower defense game, the whole idea of having to repeat levels comes from, you know, maximizing your strategy, and you usually only repeat levels if you haven't mastered them. Like in Kingdom Rush, if you haven't gotten, you know, the best rating on the level, you'll go back and replay it. But in Plants vs. Zombies 2, it forces you to replay levels for no other reason except to wait for keys. That's because, you know, each section of, you have your different, I guess I'll go back up a second. The game is split up into sections of time. You're this with this the bearded guy whose name I can never remember, and he wants to eat a taco. So you go back in time to find him a taco. And each section, you start in ancient Egypt and you move to different areas are broken up. You know, normally like Plants and Zombies are, you go from one level to the next. But different areas are gated, and to pass those gates, you have to collect keys that randomly drop from different levels. I mean, it's not set that if you play this level over and over, it'll drop a key every time. I mean, it's a low drop rate, and I think you get the first key to get through the first door, you know, just as an introduction to how the process works. But after that, I think it's usually like every five to eight levels, you have to open another door, and you either have to wait and find the keys, you have to pay a couple bucks to open a door. And it's just that kind of, it requires repetition in a game that I don't think is really built to be played over and over again like that. I don't know. What do you think?
I think it's definitely strange. It's a little bit grindier. Like, that's one of those things where with every free-to-play game, I feel like they go, you can play the whole game and you'll never have to pay a dime. And it's like, okay, awesome. And then you load it up and you realize you would have to play for like 15,000 man hours to unlock the lowest thing on the rung, or you could just shell out a dollar or whatever. So it'd be pointless not to pay or just to keep trying to play and unlock it that way. I don't know if this one's quite that bad or something. I've been hoping, I haven't made it actually that far in Plants vs. Zombies 2, but I was kind of hoping there would be like for each different setting or time period, there would be like an endless mode where similar to the endless mode they had from the first one where you could just survive as long as possible and maybe pick up some keys that way. I don't know if that's the case.
No, there isn't a survival mode. The only mode in it is the, you know, the one mode that you can play, at least right now. I mean, I don't know what they have planned in the future. I'm sure they have updates that they're working on like every other iOS game. But it's, if you're going to, the difference between the free-to-play system that's normally used that you described and the way it's implemented in this game is that in other games, the grinding is encouraged because, you know, you can upgrade attributes to things, you can find new items, all that kind of stuff. In Plants vs. Zombies 2, you're just repeating levels just to find these keys. I mean, you find coins, you know, you get, they have a currency, but the currency is only good for, you know, one single-use items that you can use within the match. It's the only thing you can use money for in that. You can't use the gold to, you know, unlock the 8 plants. I think it's 8 plants. It's either 8 or 10 plants that you can only get through in-app purchase that you can only buy one at a time. There isn't even a way to, you know, bundle them all together and pay one price to unlock all the plants. You know, I mean, some of the plants you unlock normally as you would, like you did in Plants vs. Zombies 1 as you progress, but there's eight of them, a few of them that are really useful that you can't unlock unless you pay, I think they're priced anywhere from $1 to $3. And that just seems pointless. I mean, you have features in the game that you're hiding behind numerous paywalls. It's not even like it's behind one paywall. There is a bundle where you can get one of the plants and then some gold, but the best one, you pay $10 to get some gold and, you know, one plant. That's not worth the money for me. And if you can't unlock those at any other point in the game, and there's even other things that you can unlock that are more free-to-play traditionals, like you get more plants at the, you know, you get more plant food at the beginning of the game, you get a little bit more of this at the beginning of the game, but none of that stuff can be unlocked by playing through the game. And I think that kind of, I don't like those kind of free-to-play systems that force you to pay money to keep progressing or have you go back and repeat levels for, you know, one linear purpose. There's no other reason to repeat levels in Plants vs. Zombies 2 except to get those keys.
That was one of the things that had frustrated me. I don't know about frustrated, but it was disappointing to me to see that those, when you collect coins, they're just used to buy these power-ups, and the power-ups are lame. I don't really care for them or whatever. I never remember they even exist.
They're lame.
But in the first game, it was so cool. Like, I know my wife is as big a Plants vs. Zombies person as I am. She would play the different levels, like some of the mini-games or like the endless modes, just to get money to buy things from Crazy Dave's store or whatever. Because you could unlock, like you said, more seed slots and different plants and all this stuff. And they sort of just took out Crazy Dave's shop and went, well, you know, you could just pay real money instead, which is kind of shitty.
What I think I've seen is if you buy all the unlocks, I think it comes out to be about $50. So they basically said, instead of charging people the price for a full console game, we'll just spread it out and they can pay for a full console game that way instead. Which is odd. I mean, the whole idea of Plants vs. Zombies 2 as a free-to-play iOS game is a very odd idea just in concept, because Plants vs. Zombies became as popular as it did because it was a PC game. You know, it was a PC release first. And it got really popular there before it even started up showing in other places. And why they, you know, this didn't even launch on Android. This is just an iOS free-to-play exclusive. It's just the whole... this isn't the first time, and maybe I'm a little biased because this isn't the first time EA's done this with a franchise that I enjoy. I mean, they did this earlier this year with Real Racing. Real Racing 2 was, you know, one of the best racing game on iOS, hands down. And then they took that and just bastardized everything about the progression of the game that made it so great and turned it into this, you know, free-to-play bonanza where you got to fix your car every two races and upgrades are super expensive. And every time you buy an upgrade, you got to wait for it. And you know, it's EA again. You know, this seems to be the way they're trending, and they have so much money. This trend bothers me because they have the money to pick up other franchises that are on iOS and other games and other small companies or other big companies that are making, you know, popular social games or something, and just turn them into these free-to-play money makers that are, you know, when I'm playing Plants vs. Zombies 2, I'm not having the same fun that I had in Plants vs. Zombies 1. First of all, I feel like I'm playing the same game. But second of all, I'm feeling like I'm playing the same game so somebody can take money out of my pocket, which is not, that's not why I play video games at all.
Here's my question to you. If they gave you an option, say they just said, okay, you know, a lot of people are annoyed with the freemium thing. If they said you can buy Crazy Dave's shop back, it would basically be you're unlocking everything except it's in Dave's shop, and now you can buy everything with coins, but it's going to cost you 20 or 30 real life dollars, and from now on anything we add to the game is just going to go into Dave's shop, the keys and everything, you buy them for in-game money. Would it be worth it to you to pay that money, that one big chunk, and then go back and unlock things like in the old game, or would you just not pay any money for this no matter what?
Good question. I want to say yes, because I think that for the App Store to really have great games, they need to raise prices. I think prices need to be higher and people need to be okay paying higher prices. This is why, even though we kind of got a neutered version of XCOM that had, you know, some laughable animations and, you know, kind of the camera system didn't work as well, like, I was okay with that. I'm willing to accept that because, you know, they put out a game at a premium price that is a full-featured game. I'm willing to pay for the games when they're like that. Problem is, Plants vs. Zombies 2 is basically a game I played already on numerous platforms like you have. So I've already bought Plants vs. Zombies a number of times, and there just isn't enough new features. It doesn't feel, you know, for a game to feel like a sequel, there needs to be something new. And it just doesn't, it feels like the only thing new in Plants vs. Zombies 2 is geared towards making money. And I just can't get behind that. I mean, if it was, they had some new features and stuff like that, I would be willing, you know, if they put it out as a freemium game. I'm not even sure, you know, it's a great idea that you brought up. I mean, I'm not sure how that would work with, you know, down on a coding level. I don't know how complicated of something it would be to pull that off. But if they could pull it off, I would do it in an instant. You know, if Real Racing 3 had an option where I could pay $20 to unlock the game and play it like a regular racing game where I don't have to do all these repairs and I can just get my upgrades and I earn a decent amount of money every time I race instead of earning, you know, pennies on the dollar, I would jump at it. I would buy it the second it came out. I would buy it for every game that did it just because I want to support healthy business practices on iOS, not shady business practices or, you know, cheap tactics. I mean, EA is doing this on consoles too. It's not just a mobile thing with EA. You know, they did this with Dead Rising 3. They did, Dead Space 3. They've done this with other recent games. Just, I don't like the direction EA is trying to push games into, and I guess that makes me a little more biased against Plants vs. Zombies 2 than I should be. But if it felt more like a sequel, I guess I'd be more accepting of it, but it doesn't feel like a sequel. It feels like Plants vs. Zombies 2 with new stages and a massive monetary system thrown on top.
So here's another question. Plants vs. Zombies 1 went crazy. I mean, everybody was in love with it, and then they put it on everything. I don't think there's a device in the world that you can't play Plants vs. Zombies on. Do you think that at some point Plants vs. Zombies 2 is going to end up everywhere? And if so, if they come out with the Xbox version and the PC version and everything, are they going to somehow stick with the little freemium model where they give it to you free or like a demo and then make you pay for things? Or do you think that if it goes to PSN, whatever, they'll rework it so that you're just paying for it, and then it would be more like what I said earlier, where it's like the traditional Plants vs. Zombies with the in-game store and everything?
I mean, I want to be optimistic and say that if they did put it out, you know, on Steam, and if they put it on Xbox Live, that they would charge a premium price for it and not have all that was unlocked. But, you know, we're starting to see with things like Spartacus Legends and Dota 2, other these free-to-play games are starting to, you know, gain traction and are starting to bring in revenue on those platforms too. So there's really, unless there's a big uprising with consumers, which when it comes to EA, they actually don't seem to care about as much as other game companies have shown. So I don't even know if, you know, standing up and not playing the iOS version would say anything to them, because, you know, when it came out that Plants vs. Zombies 2 was an iOS exclusive, people were pissed. And then another group of people were pissed when it came out that it was going to be a free-to-play game. And I just don't think EA cares. So I think if they put them, I think the short answer is if they put it out on other consoles, I think they'll stick with the same model, because EA's proven time and time again that what the consumer thinks isn't necessarily what EA cares about. I mean, I don't want to say they don't listen to customers at all, because obviously they wouldn't be making games that people buy, but on some level quality control is not a concern for them. They put out what they put out, and if you don't like it, then you don't buy it. They're so big that they don't have to care.
I really wonder how people would feel about the microtransaction thing on like a console. I don't think I've ever necessarily played a game like that or whatever. When I'm on the iPad or the iPhone or, you know, on any smartphone, it's so easy to me to just like, oh, okay, I'll click the button. It's like 2 seconds and then I have a new plant. But if it, on the PSN, if I have to like go to the menu and I say okay and then I need to fund my wallet and everything, it's just like, no, I'm not going to do this. This is a hassle. They make it so easy for me to spend money on stupid things on the iPad or whatever. Although, to be honest, I don't think I could name a free-to-play game I've ever spent any money on. Usually with free-to-play games, I'll play it for a while and I'll think, this is great, and I either get to the point where you have to spend money to progress and I just don't feel like it, or I just get bored of it, or I think, you know what, there are 800 other free-to-play games that I could just play and actually have more fun with without spending a dime on this one, so I move on to the next one, and then eventually it happens again.
I think the big difference between, you know, when approaching free-to-play on iOS and consoles is that, you know, since, what is it, iOS 4, we've had in-app purchases, so it's become kind of a stigma of iOS gaming that there's gonna most games are gonna have in-app purchases one way or another. Even premium, there are premium games out there that have in-app, you know, tons of in-app purchases in them. It's just kind of a part, become a part. Unfortunately, it's become a part of the culture, and it's become expected that a game will have some sort of, you know, paywall in it at some point. And that hasn't really, that hasn't happened on consoles yet. I mean, I think the next generation we may see more of it, because it's going to be a lot easier. I think one way that, one thing that makes it harder now is if you play a game, like I played just briefly, I tried to play Spartacus Legends on the Xbox, which is a free-to-play game, and most free-to-play games need to be connected online all the time. And with all the loading and, you know, some of the speed of the Xbox at this point, sometimes playing Spartacus Legends could be slog because you're waiting for the marketplace to load, or you're waiting for this to load, or you're waiting for that to load, or you're waiting for this to do a patch, you're waiting for this to do a patch, you know. And on iOS, those things happen a lot faster. I mean, even, you know, Plants vs. Zombies 2 put out a day one patch, and it took all of sitting at 5 seconds at the loading screen for it to, you know, upload. So I think there's a lot of things that separate what it means to be free to play on iOS and what it means to be free to play on console and PC. I just think they're both trending in an ugly direction. And I think EA is kind of at the head of it because they've been so enthusiastic to throw franchises into free to play. I mean, they've done it with other games too. They did it with Tetris last year when they did Tetris Blitz. They've done it with all sorts of, you know, Facebook and social and small puzzle games and PopGap games and all that kind of stuff. And frustrating. I'd rather things just be the way they used to be. I pay a price for a game and then I have the game. And then it's everything's there. I know I can just play through the game and unlock it through skill and not just through having a deep wallet. Because that's not gaming to me.
I just got done reviewing a game called Nightmare Tower. It's a sort of endless runner thing. I don't know if you've had a chance to play it or not, but it costs like $2 or $3
briefly,
or whatever. I liked it a lot. I liked the art. I liked playing it. Yeah, I don't know. For some reason, that game, unlike a lot of endless runner games, that one really did something for me. It was probably mostly the cool art that I liked, but it was a fun game and it was really fast paced. And so I'm sitting there playing it. I'm really liking it. I don't think there was any opportunity for in-app purchases. You have to just unlock everything, as far as I know. I didn't really look. I certainly didn't feel like I ever needed to pay money, even if the option is there. But I wonder, will they make more money because they just put it out for $3? Or would they be losing money because they didn't just give it to you for free and offer people some? Because every single game on the what is it, highest earning charts, like probably the first 100 are all games that are free to play games. What I want to do is, anybody listening to this, if you like endless runner type games, or even if you don't, go pay money for Nightmare Tower, because I want them to have money and realize that just selling it is still a way to make cash. Otherwise, if they make number two, it'll probably be free to play and they'll make $1 million more, but it'll be shitty for all the people who like the first one.
Yeah, I agree. It's the same developers who did Burrito Bison. I read an interview with them recently, and I think the next game they're planning on porting, now that they have they switched to using Unity on iOS, so porting from Flash, is they've built their own systems and stuff to help them do that. They're gonna, you know, on report their I mean, this is not confirmed. They said they're talking about porting their Burrito Bison sequel. And I don't want to see those kind of games go free. Like you said, I'd rather, like Nightmare Tower and Ridiculous Fishing is another great example of one that came out this year. That is a, you know, it's a $3 game. It's an endless game, but it doesn't need to fall into the, oh, here, just pay a couple bucks and you'll unlock this easier kind of thing. I think one, when developers do that, they sell themselves short because they have to hide content behind a paywall and then cater the experience to the rest of the experience to an audience that's never going to get to the best stuff. You know, you build the stuff, when you build one of these free-to-play games, you build it to hook people in the beginning, but then there usually isn't a lot of depth there, so when they progress later on, there's still incentive for them to keep playing. Like, they have to kind of build these really thin systems to bring in casual people, which in turn makes their game less fun to play, which in turn makes you want to play it less, which in turn makes it lesser of a game. I think one of the things that will help this is that Apple, you know, redesigns the way that they organize their charts. I mean, right now, be in the top 20 position in the, you know, the free-to-play charts or the pay charts, you have to, your app has to be generating, I think, like $30,000 in revenue a day, and, you know, that comes at the expense of having to advertise and market, and, you know, a lot of these companies are two-man development teams. You know, the team that put out Mikey Hooks last week, those guys are two guys that started making games, you know, because they met each other playing another iOS game. I mean, these are not companies that have big monies to market. So that's why you see at the top of these free-to-play charts are all these super huge social companies, and it's the same games week in and week out because they've found that niche of, you know, users that don't mind playing the same game over and over and over again and never really getting anywhere, and are willing to dish out money for that. And they're really lopsiding the system. So, like you said, get people that put out games that cost money are being discouraged from doing that because there's a lot more revenue to be had in our purchases. And I mean, it basically comes down to developers. I mean, what is more important to you? You know, making a lot of money, being able to pay your bills, or having integrity? I mean, that's the kind of choice you have to make right now, and it's an unfortunate one.
How many times do you think it's a difference between, like, the developer and the publisher? Like, do you think that the people who made Plants vs. Zombies at PopCap, do you think with two they were there? I mean, obviously, I still like the game. I think it's a cool game, and I think that they did a pretty good job with it or whatever. Do you think that they are super excited about the game but a little frustrated because it's coming from the suits over their heads, like, okay, you need to lock some of this stuff up behind a paywall so, you know, we can make a bunch of money or whatever, and they're just sitting there laughing all the way to the bank as people shell out over and over and over and over and over again for stupid things, and the developers are a little annoyed by the fact that they're sort of being stonewalled into doing that by the people with the money who are funding the game? Or do you think that the developers, too, are just like, eh, you know what, I want to make a bunch of money on this?
Well, I guess it depends on developers. You know, it's not a great parallel to make, but think about the way developers and publishers approach sequels. You know, sometimes you'll have developers that are really ambitious, want to bring in a lot of ideas or have things to do, and publishers, there are some publishers out there that are, you know, get really excited about that. And then there are other publishers that stick to their demographics, stick to their known audience, stick to the numbers that they know will work. And they can sometimes force developers into a box. I mean, it's hard to say what the people at PopCap are thinking, but, you know, on some level, I have to think that the creative minds behind the game, and, you know, I'm not speaking for anybody at PopCap here, but if I was a game developer and I made a game that was, you know, really well received, a lot of people played and loved, and then I had a, you know, publisher come and buy me and then sit me down and say, okay, we want you to make that game again. This time we want you to make it so we can make a lot of money off of it. And then kind of, you know, curtailed what I could do to advance the game. You know, some of the new plants that are in, you know, the shop that you can buy are kind of cool. Like, one of them lets you burn an entire row of enemies. Another one lets you slow enemies down. But if these are the only ideas you're allowed, new ideas you're allowed to put in, and you have to tie them to this other purchase that you know only a certain portion of the audience is going to get, and for some developers, you know, some of the really hardcore gaming developers, this may not even be the audience that they want to attract. You know, people that are, that don't like to grind or don't like to a challenge are the kind of people that normally gravitate towards an app purchase. There's nothing against them. Sometimes games are too hard for people, and for them to enjoy the full game, they want to pay a couple extra bucks to get some help. I'm perfectly fine with that. But that's not the case with these games. And I do wonder sometimes how handcuffed developers feel, you know, if they have all these ideas and instead they're being forced to put all their time and energy into building an economy instead. And, you know, I wonder what kind of effect that'll have long term on games, you know, as an industry as a whole.
I feel like a lot of people are depressed more and more each day when the free to play games make $1 million, and a lot of times the games are terrible. They're just there to soak that money out of you. It's not even like they're fun or whatever. They hook you in just enough to grab your money, and then by the time you're bored of it, you've spent $200 for nothing, basically, because you weren't having as much fun as you thought you were in the first place. You were just feeling like you needed to compete with your friends or whatever on Facebook. But instead of being super depressed about the free-to-play thing, I've sort of been getting more excited about the other end, which in my mind, the opposite of free-to-play is Kickstarter. Because for free-to-play, they just give it to you for free, and they say, if you like it, you pay some money, or they hold you over the barrel and shake you upside down till your wallet falls out, depending on the game. But with Kickstarter, it's the total opposite. You pony up the money ahead of time, before they're even going to make the game, and then you just pick, like, specifically, this game looks fantastic, I'm willing to drop however much money just to see it get made, and then I get my copy and, you know, I have it forever. I paid my money already, I helped fund it. The people aren't dealing with publisher nonsense, so of course they're going to get to make the game that they really want to make. Whether it turns out good or bad isn't really up to the people giving the money necessarily. But I think that could be a good counter to the free-to-play system. Does that sound like something that is true to you too?
Well, I think in theory it's a good idea, because the thing that Kickstarter does that allows... biggest difference when people try to develop a game through Kickstarter, when people try to develop a game through traditional, you know, channels, the way things are set up right now, the biggest problem for me, you know, through this whole free-to-play conversation, is that there's a dissonance between developers and consumers. On some level, there's a miscommunication between developers and publishers understanding what gamers are doing and what they really want, and then applying that, and then consumers being able to express that in a way that's not just, I hate you, I'm never going to buy anything from you again. That's not the typical overreaction that we get on the internet these days. People make a lot of fun of One Direction and Justin Bieber fans, but some gaming fans can be just as bad when they come to trolling at free-to-play games or trolling at companies for not making the paid game they wanted or charging too much for a game. Like, there's a miscommunication between developers and consumers that doesn't have to exist on Kickstarter, because that relies on communication between developers and consumers. I think, I don't want to generalize, but I think a part of the problem is that there isn't a publisher attached to that. When a developer is trying to make a game for, you know, through traditional channels, developers have to court publishers. And publishers have their expectations, they have their demands, they have their, you know, numbers that they want to stick to. And, you know, that's fine. That's the business they run, and that's how they should run their business. But there's a component that's missing of that. You know, developers don't turn around and go to consumers and say, okay, this is what we're thinking about. What do you guys want to see? You know, they may put a post on their Facebook page, but, you know, they're doing that to drive numbers. They're not doing that because they're actually listening. And I think the difference there is that developers on Kickstarter, you know, I think Kickstarter has its own problems when it comes to, you know, games getting funded and what the end result ends up being. But the key difference there is that there's a relationship between developers and consumers that's lost in, you know, the current game model, you know, production model for big budget games. You know, consumers and developers don't have conversations anymore, and Kickstarter has allowed them to have that conversation, and for consumers to show faith and invest in developers, which is an opportunity they never had before. If you wanted to invest in a game developer, you have to have millions of dollars, you know, to pay them. Now you can invest with millions of other people who are interested in that same game. And right there, you build a community for a game, you drive discussion on a game, you engage people in something, and you can talk to them about what they want, because they're paying you to build the game they want to play. I just think that's one of the big problems on the other end of the system.
You think that now Kickstarter is like the top layer of the game development ladder, where you wake up one day, you're 17 years old, you decide, I want to make video games or whatever, so you make a team of people, you get your friends together, and you make indie games for a while, and some of them are okay, and some of them suck, and eventually you get picked up by, like, a big-time game developer, and you work there, and you make a name for yourself, and you become, like, a game development rock star, and then eventually you graduate to Kickstarter, where now you're such a well-known name, you can just slap your name on a Kickstarter project and you're guaranteed $3 million and you get to do whatever you want, and people have seen your work before, so they trust you or whatever in a way that they might not trust, you know, Joe average Kickstarter game developer. We've seen it with, like, you know, Double Fine and the Wasteland guys, where it just suddenly goes crazy and they make these millions of dollars. But do you feel like there's a lot of developers who are probably just going to aspire to that, to be able just have the creative freedom and the people backing them or whatever? Or do you think that there's always going to be super talented developers who are like, you know what, I want to work for EA, I'm perfectly happy letting them do whatever, I just want to work for this company and do what they tell me?
Well, I think that's kind of why we have two different game markets in this day and age. You know, we have our traditional studio games and we have the indie games. And I think, again, I don't want to generalize or speak for anyone, but if I'm putting myself in the shoes of a young game developer and, you know, looking at the way games work now and the things people do with games, I think the progression seems to be is that kids will start by building game mods. You know, they'll build mods for Grand Theft Auto, or they'll build mods for Skyrim or something, and they'll get a developer's attention, you know, a big developer, you know, a company that has money. Then they'll go in there and slave away and learn to trade for a few years, and then if they can happen to make enough money and stay employed long enough, because the problem with game development on that end now is that a lot of that has turned into independent contracting, and people get let go as soon as a game is finished. So people go for long stretches being unemployed. It's kind of like freelance writing in a way. But I think the end goal for a lot of developers now, at least those that really want to be creative and ambitious, is indie development, because A, you can use Kickstarter. Kickstarter is much more indie friendly than it is. I mean, just look at the Spike Lee Kickstarter. Look how much, vitriol got directed at Spike Lee for doing a Kickstarter. He's a studio name, big name in film. Even Zach Braff's Kickstarter didn't get the same flack that Spike Lee's did. And I think that's a kind of a good comparison to make. If EA went on and started doing a Kickstarter tomorrow, people would start throwing eggs at them. I mean, of course, you'd have the people that, all the people that bought SimCity and said it was awesome would go on there and give EA all their money. But EA can have those people for all I care about. I think indie developers, I think these days, I think it's the trend in any culture, really. You see it in television, you see it, you're really slowly starting to see it in film as, the dichotomy between indie films and studio films gets bigger. But creative minds want to have more control over what they do, and Kickstarter is a way to do that. Indie gaming is a way to do that. So I think the thing to do now is, if you're making games, you're making movies or something, is you get in with one of the big studios and you learn the trade, you learn how everything's done, because these big companies do things really efficiently and they do things on such a big level. They understand the intricacies of everything. So you go in there, learn that, slave away, don't have a life, starve for a few years. And then once you can, as soon as you see a window to get out, you get out and you try and strike it out on your own. I think that's, the entrepreneurial foundations of capitalism. And I don't know, I think Kickstarter could be a really good tool, but even a company like Double Fine, we're starting to see them have a kind of a tumultuous relationship with Kickstarter. Their next game, Kickstarter funded game, is coming out in two pieces. I'm not sure how they're I don't know if they're, I don't think they're charging people that supported the Kickstarter for the second piece, but their game basically, okay, you guys gave us so much money that now we have to split the game up in two parts. And everybody that paid to get a game, they paid X amount of money to get a game in this window, they're not actually getting that now. So I still think there's some kinks to be worked out to see if Kickstarter can actually work for games, but I think it presents an opportunity that been slowly, decomposing from modern games and having that creative control over your own product. I mean,
Yeah,
there aren't a
fair.
lot of Ken Levines in the world right now that get to write a script and control a game from beginning to end like that. And even him, I'm sure he had to make major concessions on the game that he wanted to make because he's working with a studio.
Right. Yeah, that's probably true. I wonder sometimes if there's like an indie games bubble where right now indie games are really big or whatever, but at some point there will be indie developers who are making great games. Let's say like Supergiant. Bastion is amazing or whatever. But if their next game came out and it tanked, it was just terrible, would all those guys end up in a position where it was like, okay, go work for EA or Activision or starve to death? Are we gonna see that where you're only as good as your last game, and if you put out one that people just don't get or doesn't resonate with people for some reason, you're unemployed, you just don't get to feed your family anymore unless you go sell your soul?
Now, I hope not. I think some of the things we've seen suggested by companies like Sony for the next generation sound like they're going to help support indie devs because they understand that this is a new market where, the market for $60 games is shrinking. There aren't as many people willing to go out and buy $60 games, that were 5 years ago. And even a $60 game doesn't appear to make as much money as it used to. I mean, look at the sales of Tomb Raider. After Tomb Raider was out for a couple of months, the company came out and said, "Yeah, we sold 3 million copies, but we didn't really make any money on it." I think in the next generation, having these new marketplaces and this new self-publishing foundation will make it at least make it easier and cheaper for companies. I think one of the things that's kind of corralled indie games in this generation, for example, on Microsoft is just the cost of publishing an indie game on Microsoft or publishing an update or something. If you wanted to, you come out with a game now and people expect expansions later on, whether it's iOS or console, people expect to get more of that game. And when you're an indie developer and you put every penny into your game to pay the money to get it published for the first time, look at Fez. When Fez came out and they put out a bug fix and then it had a bug in it that crashed everything, and it took them months be able to fix it just because it was so expensive. I mean, once those barriers are gone, I think we'll really see if this indie game thing is a bubble or if it's really an industry that's starting to support itself. I'd lean towards the latter. I'd lean towards indie games become, I mean, part of this is because I want them to become something, because I think they provide a great alternative, to people that either don't have the time to put, 60, 70 hours into a $60 game and buy all the expansions and get the full experience, or those that are just interested in smaller, more unique and ambitious experiences, which we're getting on indie. Indie games are getting more ambitious by the day, and they're, you have indie games that are bordering on art now, and I want to see more of that. So I'd like to say yes, that it is going to grow in the next console generation, but you never know.
Do you think that innovation, and I mean true innovation, do you think that can only grow in an indie space where the people who are making the game have full creative control over it? Because sometimes I feel like the big budget games, I mean everybody says this, but it's just last year's game with a few more things tacked on or whatever. They never want to take a risk because it costs too much. You can't spend, $100 million or whatever making a game and if it has just some weird stuff in it. Well, Mirror's Edge is probably a good example. Everybody I've ever talked to who played that game thought it was great, but I assume they lost an absurd amount of money on it because a lot of people were just like, eh, I'm not going to play this game about just running around in first person or whatever. So it's like, well, they're finally making Mirror's Edge 2 or the reboot or whatever after all this time. But I don't know. I just feel like when you look at things like Kickstarters or whatever, all these games that are coming out in the PC space or the indie game space are so much more interesting to me than just the new Call of Duty, here's the new Halo or whatever. I mean, even the games I'm excited about are basically just rehashes of things I've already done before.
Yeah, I think that is. I think in a way, the big budget console gaming industry is closer to collapsing than the indie gaming industry is because, like you said, it costs so much to develop games now, and it costs so much to market a game that it's becoming harder and harder for developers to justify taking risks on something because it's an unknown. I mean, businesses stay away from the unknown for a reason because it's a big risk. Like you said, even the new games that we're getting that are considered innovative, like Tomb Raider and Grand Theft Auto V that are coming up, are essentially games that we've played a bunch of times, right? I mean, this is the seventh Grand Theft Auto game? And I mean, I know the first two were top-down racing games, essentially, but I mean, Grand Theft Auto V is, I mean, it's going to be a great game to play. It's going to be fun as hell, but, it adds you can play as three characters and you're in a big city. I mean, it's a bigger city. I mean, it's more of the same and on some level. And I think there's a few factors that play into why indie games can be more creative. I think it's one because more creative minds are going towards that because they feel they can have more creative control, whether it's true or not. I mean, it seems to be the way. New releases come. I mean, games like BioShock Infinity aren't going to release from every franchise is not going to have their BioShock Infinity. The next Borderlands is not going to tell some wildly outrageous story that does something completely new. I mean, we've already seen that Gearbox isn't trying to reinvent the wheel here. So, maybe those days are over. Maybe the days of reinventing the wheel are over, and we've become people that like to consume the same things over and over. Maybe that's just who we are as a culture, but. I'm hoping that's not the case, and I think indie games will always be a way, as long as there's companies, publishers out there supporting them, and consoles that have marketplaces that make it easy to put those games out there and have people see them, that there's a hope for creativity in video games. I mean, look at Supergiant's next game. They're not doing Bastion 2. They're taking the framework they built with Bastion and doing something completely different with it, and it looks freaking awesome.
That is true. I'm pretty much on board for anything Supergiant does at this point. Bastion was sort of mind-blowing to me. I've sort of been wondering if the fact that the new consoles are coming out is just going to exacerbate this problem. I sort of have been feeling console fatigue for a while now just because it seems like they've been out forever now, and I don't really want to spend the money on moving up to the next thing, but I'm interested to see, what kind of power they can put behind it and all this stuff. It's going to be cool. But presumably, that just means that games are going to cost even more to make, and it's going to mean that bigger companies are going to want to take even less risks when these consoles come out, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, look at the. I mean, if you look at just look at Sony's conference when they first announced the PlayStation 3 and then started announcing games. I mean, what were the most interesting things they showed? it was the indie games. I mean, those things looked really cool. I mean, that I can't remember the name of the developer that showed it, but that puzzle platformer they showed that had all the different boxes and platforms and stuff that you had to move around on, that looked awesome. I mean, that looks really cool, and I watch a video like that and I say, I don't know how to play this game. I'm going to have to learn how to play this game and learn this world. But then I see something like Watch Dogs and cool, I get a lot of features, but open world third person action game where you run away from the cops whenever you do something bad. I've done that so many times now, I don't need to do that again. And I think that's one of the odd reasons why, the only reasons why I'm excited for the new console generations is to see what indie developers can do with all this power, you know, and these new supposedly simplified tools put out their hands, to see what kind of stuff they can put out, because, you know, big budget games are so expensive. I mean, look at Call of Duty Ghosts. What is the big thing about that game? It's got a dog, and it's animated. That's what they're doing with Call of Duty Ghosts. That's the new thing with that game. I don't care about that. I could not care. I mean, I guess on some level it's because I don't care about the Call of Duty series at all. But I don't care about a dog in a game. I could go play Fable 3 if I want to watch a dog run around with me and be, you know, semi-useful sometimes. You know, they've done that already. You're just taking an idea that's already been done and putting it in a game because you want to give off the appearance that you're doing something new. But you're not. Still got the same title. It's Call of Duty. So on some level, it's the same game. You know, it's not Super Mario Brothers to Super Mario Brothers 2 to Super Mario Brothers 3 anymore. These are not new games with new ideas and new philosophies in their foundations. These are just the same games with some stuff thrown on top to say, hey, you know what? Paid $65 for this, you would get this dog that runs around with you, and it'll look really cool, we promise. And we've got expansions. Buy the season pass, and we got you.
Right? These days, every game is just Madden. Something comes out, and it's like, well, we took what you liked last year, and we added some new colors to it. Now the guys look a little different when they get tackled or whatever. Every game is Madden now. It comes out and they go, here's a dog.
That is.
There you go.
I mean, I remember playing the first Assassin's Creed and being like, holy crap, this is really cool. Like, this takes place in a historical time period and this is different. And since then, they've made, what, 6 Assassin's Creed games? 6. I mean, they have 1, 2, and 3. Oh, excuse me, they have 5. They have Brotherhood and Assassins. Plus, you'd think talking probably 20 expansions for that. So now I've already played, you know, had I played all those games, I would have played the same game essentially with some tweaks and, you know, new, you know, tiny things added to it for 200 hours. That's 2 weeks of my time that my life I'll never get back.
I think with the Assassin's Creed game, I just played the numbered entries. To me, that I like running around in a realized historical place or whatever, but that's basically it to me. I can't follow some nonsense story about computer aliens and the end of the world and whatever else. Ugh, forget it. But I just want to run around colonial Boston, and I want to hit a redcoat in the back of the face with a hatchet. Yes, I'll do that for a while.
Yeah, but that is cool. Like, I do like that they do that, but when I'm doing that, I get the feeling like I'm in colonial Boston smacking a red hat. But wait, wasn't I just in Italy, you know, smacking around the Italian version of that, you know, just a year ago? Like, even those, you know, I don't feel like they bring enough to the table that's new that makes me feel like I'm playing something different. Like, the when it comes to Grand Theft Auto 5, the thing I'm most excited for is Grand Theft Auto Online, because they're putting in things like an economy and you know, they're adding all these new features to it is something that I played before, but they're doing it in a way that it's going to make it feel brand new. It's going to feel completely different. It's not going to feel like, oh yeah, I played this game, but I got this one new weapon that I can use, or I got this one new activity I can do. You know, I feel like, I know when I play Grand Theft Auto Online, I'm feeling like I'm playing a completely different game. That's a new experience, because I'm going to be, first of all, it's an online version of the game. So it's totally different. But the way they're constructing stuff within that world is completely different from the way they construct stuff in the normal world. So it will feel like a different game, which, if it's something like that, if you're making, you know, changes on a fundamental level to a game, that interests me. But if, you know, we're going from Borderlands to Borderlands 2, like, Borderlands 2 is a wonderful game and I played it a ton, but after a while I was like, you know what, this is basically Borderlands again.
Yeah, it is. I think, but people will be happy with that. I mean, they'll make 30 Borderlands games and there's certain people who are just going to buy every single one and they're going to have just as much fun, and good for them, I guess. I wonder how many, like you mentioned Grand Theft Auto Online. Can they only get away with doing something that in-depth for the online section being totally different from the single-player section because they're such a big name and they know they're going to sell 100 million copies or whatever anyway? I mean, do you think if somebody else came out and they said, okay, we got this idea for this really cool open-world game, and then the online is going to be totally different, would the publishers go, no, I don't think so. No, we don't know who you are and we don't care. Just, you know, adapt multiplayer to reuse all the single-player crap so we don't have to spend a bunch of money.
Rockstar is an interesting case. Rockstar is a little bit different than your typical, you know, AAA developer. You know, essentially, you know, at a very basic level, Rockstar uses one massively popular, super loved franchise to fund games that you would never see from another big budget. Look at what other game company would put out L.A. Noire and make it the way they did it, where you're doing in-depth, complex investigations of things. What other company would put out Red Dead Redemption, this super ambitious, sprawling Western RPG that, yes, it is a sequel of their previous game, but is nothing like Red Dead Revolver was, you know, basically because of the tech they had available. I mean, if there's one company that I trust in doing the same thing again, it's Rockstar, because they know how to make that a different experience. I mean, even look at Grand Theft Auto 3 and Vice City. Pretty much the exact same game, but they realized that by fundamentally changing the location, the time period, and the personality of the game, they can create a new experience. Rockstar doesn't build games like other game companies do, and I think that's why I'm so excited for Grand Theft Auto 5, and I'm willing to drop $70 on a game that I played 4 years ago, because I know that Rockstar is going to do something different that'll take my breath away, that'll amaze me, that'll inspire awe. You know, Rockstar still makes inspired, thoughtful, deep video games. They're like the only company that still does it. That's why because they don't put out games every 8 months. They're not rushing to build games. They know, they trust in what they do. They have faith in their creative minds, and that's just something other companies don't have anymore.
Yeah, I think that's it, is that you're not going to see Grand Theft Auto 6 or whatever Rockstar's next different. Year.
No, it is going to be a while before. I mean, think of how long the Xbox was out before Grand Theft Auto 4 came out. It was out for 3 years before they came out with Grand Theft Auto 4. And they don't care that, you know, have they announced anything about, you know, Grand Theft Auto 5 for the next generation systems? No. I mean, they're putting out this game on this console because they know that there's a huge customer base that is still going to have this. They're ballsy. They're putting out this massive game they expect people to invest hundreds of hours in, you know, a couple months before a new console launches. And there is no other game company doing that right now. That's why nothing else has been coming out. I mean, we have Rayman Legends coming out, but that's, you know, Rayman Origins. And we have Call of Duty Ghosts coming out, but that's a showcase piece for a console launch. I mean, Rockstar is ballsy. They're the one company that still has balls. And that's why I respect them so much, and I'll buy every game they put out and every expansion they put out, because even their expansions, I know I'm getting something new and fresh every time. If I love Rockstar, it'll be hard for you to find me to say a bad thing about Rockstar because of the way they do things. They have integrity that other game companies just haven't wanted to maintain or haven't been able to maintain for financial reasons.
If Rockstar announces tomorrow that they're coming out with Table Tennis 2 as a launch title for Xbox One or PS4, will that make you want to buy a console right away so that you can play some awesome table tennis in super high definition?
I mean, I still play the original table tennis, so I think that should tell you, like, I trust Rockstar more than any other game company on the market, hands down. I mean, I really do. Even more than, you know, companies like Bungie or Bethesda that are willing to, I'd say more Bungie than Bethesda, that are willing to take risks on games, just because I just think about the first time I sat down to play Grand Theft Auto 3, and then when I stood up 4.5 hours later and said, holy crap, holy crap. And ever since that moment, Rockstar's replicated that moment. You know, they've replicated that moment on the Xbox, and they've done it multiple times on the Xbox, and they're going to do it again when they release Grand Theft Auto 5 in the fall. And other game companies just don't, they're not willing to do that. I mean, they're willing to return to popular franchises and spend a lot of money on a game, but only if it's the same game that they know will sell really, really well. They're not letting developers take huge risks on things. Like you said, it's the Madden syndrome. Make a game, tweak it, update it, put it out, people are going to buy it. It's unfortunate. But as long as we have one company like Rockstar, I'll be happy because they'll put out a game that I can put 200 hours into and be joyful while I'm doing it.
I think I'm right there with you. Anything Rockstar related, pretty much. I mean, I've played all the Grand Theft Auto games. I've made it my business to beat every Grand Theft Auto game since 3 without ever using a cheat. I don't know why, but I have done it. That's just like a little gold star on my, you know, gamer uniform or something. But Red Dead Redemption might be still my favorite game ever. There was a podcast not that long ago where I was talking about I had thrown that back in, and I was playing that alongside Last of Us and BioShock Infinite. I would play each a little bit for a couple hours or whatever. And in the end, I decided Red Dead Redemption is still better than Last of Us or BioShock Infinite. And anybody who thinks it's not is stupid. That's all there is to it. Red Dead Redemption might be the best game I've ever played.
And even L.A. Noir has, you know, it has its issues. It's not the greatest game in the world. But, I mean, just think about what they tried to do with that game and how many people are trying to take risks like that and take chances and tell those kinds of stories. I mean, it's not happening anymore. It's not. You get your sport games, you get your, everybody makes their open world game, and that's it. I mean, I'm kind of excited for Disney Infinity because they're doing some cool stuff with open world, but on some level it's like, yeah, you're kind of playing off what the Lego games do now, you know? It's kind of the same thing that, and even Lego put out their open world third person action game earlier this year. I mean, everybody's playing on it, but there's only one, you know, one company that's really still willing that can do that, put out a game with the same name, but make it feel like a brand new experience and make you feel like you got your dollar's worth. You soaked every dollar out of that game that you could.
Yeah, I think that's true too. I was just going to say, speaking of Disney Infinity, I will be talking about that at length the next time we meet next week.
Yeah, that looks kind of cool. I mean, you know, on some level it has all these issues that we're talking about because it's a game built to make you buy figurines so you can play the game more, but it does look really cool, and some, you know, like the workshop they're putting in there looks freaking awesome.
I would probably be much less excited if I didn't have a child who was at the perfect age that he's gonna play with the figures on his own, make up little games with them when I'm not home, and then as soon as I get home, he's gonna be like, "Let's play, throw them on the base, and let's do this thing." So that's probably a lot of where my excitement comes from, is converting a child to be another, you know, life wasting video gamer like me.
Yeah, it's like everything good and bad about modern video games is in Disney Infinity, because, you know, even if you think about like Pixar and the trends Pixar's taken recently with, you know, Cars 2 and then allowing Disney Toon Studios to make planes, and then there's already a plane sequel being made that, you know, totally bastardizes everything that Pixar tries to do with their films, and, you know, just these poorly thought out, ill plotted and totally mindless sequels that encourage, you know, these stupid ideas for children to follow. But at the same time, it's like, holy crap, I get to be every Disney character in the Disney world, and I get to do all this awesome stuff, and it allows, you know, it provides a venue for me to introduce my children, you know, the next generation of gamers to awesome games and, you know, awesome Disney franchises at the same time. It's like, games right now, it's the dichotomy between the good and the evil. How much of the evil are you going to let into your video games?
I wonder how many of the future, like, game developers will be growing up on Disney Infinity and the toy box mode, where they can put things together and experiment with how it works and, you know, see how the different characters interact and make up little stories in their head or whatever about what's going on and why this is happening. It could be good. Maybe this is what it is we're training up the next generation of creative people with Disney Infinity. Maybe that's giving it too much credit, though.
Well, you never know. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what people do with those tools. That is it Microsoft or Sony that's coming out with that workshop where you can build games, you know, right inside the platform. I can't remember what it's called off the top of my head. But things like that, it'll be really interesting to see what happens, because that, like you said, that's another way to kind of inspire people to get into games and, you know, maybe bring back some of that creativity and that thoughtfulness and, you know, just kind of playfulness in games. Games don't feel as fun to play anymore as they do. It kind of feels like often when you play a game, you're going through a series of, okay, I got to do this so I can get this achievement. Okay, I got to do this so so I can get the story mission. Okay, I got to do this, and it's, you know, some of the fun and the wonder's been lost. I think that's why Red Dead Redemption is such a beautiful game, because, you know, you just get on a horse and go ride around the landscape for, you know, 2 hours if that's what you want to do. Kind of have random encounters and things like that. I'm hoping it does. I'm hoping things like Disney Infinity and, you know, that new workshop will, you know, inspire people to make some more creative games and to think outside the box. But again, it can do that, but it could also kind of gear them in the wrong direction, saying, okay, look, I can make the cool stuff with these things, so let's make the cool stuff with the other big franchise. You know, I want to see new IP. I want to see new ideas on the next new consoles. I don't want to see, you know, another Call of Duty or another Killzone. You know, I want to see fresh. It's time for some freshness. We've been playing the same games for the last 8 years. We need something fresh.
Yeah, I totally agree. Well, I think we need to wrap it up this week. Why don't you take a minute to share all of your different Twitters and websites and stuff for people so they can hit you up and follow you?
Sure. Well, you can follow me on Twitter at Process Media, all one word. And my website that I write about TV at normally is processmedia.wordpress.com. I also write all over the internet. I guess the other big one to mention here is that I write game reviews for Slug Magazine. If you live in Salt Lake City, or I mean, even if you have an internet connection, you can go to slugmag.com and check that out. What about you, Joe? Where can we find you on Twitter?
I'm at Joe_Ryan150. And then, of course, weekly podcast specials, website, nonsense at gamesreviews.com, and anywhere else that I feel like, you know, throwing some words on a page or assaulting everyone with my annoying voice. That's pretty much it. All right. I guess that's it. Thanks for joining me, Randy.
All right. Thanks for having me.
And that's it for this week. With that, we are out.